Today's episode is being sponsored by Strength to Strength, a 501c3 nonprofit organization established to bring victims of terrorism together globally in order to share their experiences and move forward with their lives despite the trauma they have been through. Few understand how a single terror attack can affect so many families on such a deep level, physically, emotionally, financially, and spiritually. Strength to Strength has taken it as their motto, Survivors Healing Survivors, recognizing that we are responsible for each other and that those impacted by terrorism, by injury, or the loss of a loved one deserve no less than our very best. For more information on Strength to Strength, please visit www.stosglobal.org. That's www.stosglobal.org and use code ARIPOD, ARIPOD.
If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Sherman. I'm your host. I have an incredible guest who's got an incredible, incredible story. I'll read you her bio and you'll just, you know, you'll get it. Believe me, you'll get it. Sabra Anna Marcus. She's one of the youngest survivors of the Warsaw Ghetto. She lived a life only those who have survived Hitler's hell can imagine. In her book, Only a Bad Dream, she narrates the drama of her early years through her most vivid memories. Sabra courageously recounts those childhood experiences in her compelling voice, now freed from the repeated warnings, "Don't tell anyone you're a Jew. Don't forget you're a Jew. It was only a dream. Hang on tight or you'll get lost and die." She tells of traipsing through forests at night, fleeing certain death, of her parents hiding her in a church, desperate to save her life. A frantic search for surviving family found the Marcuses traveling throughout Europe on foot, by rowboat, military train, farm wagon, trucks, and finally the ship Caserta that delivered them to the land of hope, freedom, and new beginnings, the only Jewish homeland, Israel. Only a Bad Dream shares how in the midst of hunger and deprivation, Sabra still found joy in simple things like cats, the moon, wolves, and fireflies. A story of the triumph of the human spirit, this memoir provides strong insight into the courage, strength, and dignity possessed by those who endured the Holocaust. Please help me welcome Sabra Marcus. Sabra, how are you?
Thank you. I'm well. Unfortunately, we're very, very hot in Calgary. And I mean, very hot in every possible way, in spirit and in temperature.
Well, you're not alone because it's right now it's a hot throughout the entire country, throughout the U.S. and through Canada. So, but my understanding is it's only one more day.
No, three.
Oh, three more days?
We get three of them.
Oh, wow.
Well, you see, we're always generous. We take as much as we can, and then we give it away.
There we go.
Canada is generous.
There we go.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I think your story is very, very important. I'm glad that I'm going to be the one who's going to record it. It's going to be recorded for posterity. We need to get the stories out. We need, you know, the Holocaust survivors are, you know, unfortunately, it's been a long time and they're dying out and we're losing those stories. And it's so important to get those stories out. And so I'm so happy that you have agreed to come on my show and tell your story. Now, as you know, my podcast is called Whispers and Bricks. And it's basically the whispers of the good things in life, you know, the things that we follow our heart with, and, you know, they represent the good in life. the bricks are the bad things that happen to us in life. Now, my brick again was, you know, 9/11. I got hit with a major brick on 9/11. I was in the building, as you know. Right. But your bricks were are just unfathomable, unfathomable. I'm going to do very, very little talking on this episode because this is all about you. It's about your story. So if you please, all right, start from anywhere that you want, finish wherever you want. Okay. But please tell us your story.
I'd like to mention, to verify a point you just made, the words were spoken by Elie Wiesel. I had the great honor of having met him several times. And when I said, Elie, this is too difficult, I can't keep writing. It's taken ages and years. Every time I get to some horrific episodes, the pain and the tears go on for weeks and months and I can't write. He says, oh yes, you can and you will. We are dying. And now he's gone. The words you're not going to use now will be lost forever. Speak, write, finish your book. It was his encouragement on three different occasions that finally gave me that needed shake. When your whole body gets shaken up, you shake your head and you say, what is wrong with you? Do it. He said, do it. Netanyahu said, do it. Who do you want to come down? The Almighty in person and say, do it? I said, yeah, well, you know, come to think of it, that would be some kind of encouragement. I would run to the computer immediately.
Now, just before you begin, again, the name of the book?
Only a Bad Dream.
Only a Bad Dream.
With a question mark.
Right. And it's available where?
But it's also, the subtitle is Childhood Memories of a Holocaust Survivor.
And where is it available? Where can people buy it?
Amazon.
Amazon.
Amazon.com.
Okay. Amazon.com. Right. Only a Bad Dream. You're gonna want to pick this book up. Okay. I'm sorry. Please continue.
I would like to start a story with an episode that took place someplace. I've made myself a few notes because, you know, when you keep talking, you don't want to misrepresent a particular date. Dates are important. I am guesstimating that this event must have taken place somewhere in 1850 to 1880, somewhere in that neighborhood. The story came to me from my father. The men that love to tell stories, but they only reached the Second World War and only a few stories from that period. And the rest of the time and the rest of the stories and the history, Mama and Papa became mute. I had to pull, begging and pleading and crying to try and get some information about our history. This one he told freely because he thought it was comical. I don't see much comedy in it. But then my father liked to be in a state of mind and have it around him of comfort, love, courtesy, hope for the future. The story starts, as I said, about 1850, 1880, somewhere there. Again, I also don't know the exact geography. It could have taken place somewhere in the heart of Russia or in the heart of Poland. Papa wasn't sure. And the story is really quite interesting. military was grabbing Jewish kids to put them as fodder in the front lines. So if anyone needs to cross any ugly lines where there is a great deal of military, you send all the Jews first in all the front lines, and then it's the Polacks and the Russians. And so they went from village to village, from town to town, grabbing those Jewish kids, loading them up on wagons, and taking them to wherever the barracks were preparing them. They might have even taught them how to shoot and gave them guns. Not all did, but they did. And so my great, great, great grandfather, whoever he was, said to his son, "We need to hide you somewhere. They're going to come, the military will come. And they're going to insist that you will be taken into the military and you will be sent to the front lines where no Jewish kids ever come back." And his son, that was the eldest boy, excuse me, he was of the age. And he said, "You know what? I heard a story that came from some city not far from where they lived, that the Jewish man had a gimmick. If you hide and they find you, they shoot you right on the spot. But if you don't have a trigger finger, you're useless to the military. So many of the Jewish boys, it became the new game in town. Papa, we have to get the butcher, we have to get the moyo, we have to get one of those people and cut off the trigger finger. And some cut off both trigger fingers, right arm and left arm. Both hands all of a sudden didn't have this finger. They were gone." And so this great, 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 great grandfather looked at him and he said, "To maim yourself? Cut off your right trigger finger?" He said, "Well, then I'll be useless to them, Papa. Let me do it." And his father thought about it and thought about it. He said, "Give me a few minutes. I think I have a better solution. No, you're not going to maim yourself. You're going to Warsaw." "Warsaw? Why would I go to Warsaw? We have cousins. We have cousins everywhere." So they sneaked him out of the city into a wagon with a great deal of merchandise that was going to Warsaw. He was hidden underneath. And it was going to take days and days and days to get there. But he stayed in that wagon. They arrived in Warsaw. And by God, that's exactly what happened. Cousins in Warsaw took him in. They looked at him. They said, "You can't dress like this and stay in Warsaw. You look like you just came from the sticks." So immediately a new wardrobe was given to him from one of the cousins. And he said, "Have you ever been to a city like Warsaw?" And he said, "No." He said, "Have you seen the glory of Warsaw?" "No." He said, "Good. Tomorrow I will introduce you to your new home, Warsaw." He says, "You know, I love singing and I love acting." He said, "No, I know nothing of you and the family." And so he started telling him stories. And he says, "What I really don't know for sure is, what is your name?" And he said, same as your name, same last name, Marcus, M-A-R-K-U-S, Marcus. And my father said that his great-great-great-great cousin said to his own cousin in Warsaw, that's not good at all. What if they find out that I have relatives in Warsaw? What if the military finds out? And that cousin said, well, what do you want to do? He says, come. You said it's a big city. And you said you like to sing and dance and act. Yes. Well, do you have a theater district? We do. So they go for a visit to the theater district. And that great, 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 great cousin of ours is looking at the marquee of every theater with the names of all the actors. Sorry, I misspoke. The name was not the name that I just used. That wasn't Marcus. Marcus is the name he saw on the marquee. He said, who is this? One of the most famous actors in Poland. His name is Marcus. See? M-A-R-K-U-S. Well, what's your name? He says, same as yours. He says, same as mine? He says, I'm your cousin. Bromberg? And I looked at my father. What? What's a Bromberg? He says, that's who we are. I am a Bromberg? He said, yes, if you go back to 1850. I said, well, I don't want to go back that far. I'm happy right here. I said, and what happened, Papa? He says, Marcus was never found. And Marcus had a wonderful life in Warsaw and had a wife and children and had been registered as a Marcus. Wolf Marcus, no less. Can you get any more Goyish? The name my father carries was the same. My father was Wolf Marcus. In Hebrew, his name was Ze'ev, which is the word for wolf in Hebrew. I said, so what happened to Bromberg? Did we lose track of Bromberg? He said, Bromberg doesn't exist because Bromberg became Marcus. Would he never go home? Well, no. You could never go home. Did any of his family ever visit him? Well, no, because he no longer existed. Velvo Bromberg disappeared from the face of the earth. Bromberg disappeared. There was no contact. Our history starts with this make-believe Marcus. And then his children traveled and married throughout different parts of Poland. And that's where my Yitzhak Marcus, Yaakov Marcus, is my great-grandfather, Yaakov Marcus, his son Yitzhak Marcus, is the father of my dad. And I'm saying, Papa, then you're telling me I have no clue who I am. Well, you're a Marcus. I said, no, there is no such thing unless I am the daughter or great-great-granddaughter of that Polish genius of an actor. Maybe the name influenced me to go into show business. That's why I danced and acted in films. He says, there you go. Already we have a history. I said, no, Father, I need the truth. Sarah, why can't you leave well enough alone? I said, because now it's not well and it's not enough. It's not the truth. How do I get the truth? He says, well, One of the things you love more than anything else is science fiction. Get yourself a machine, take a small trip to 1850, find Bromberg in that small town, have a chat. So every time I watch any of those science fiction movies, I keep saying, can I borrow that machine for a minute? I need a quick trip, you know? Who would it hurt? I have to tell you, all you nice people, this is one of the few fun, humorous stories. My life has been a story of questions. Where did this happen? When did that happen? Why? Why would you torture and torment, abuse, above all else, little children? Why would you do this to small children? This is why I have that subtitle of Childhood Memories of the Holocaust. It is inconceivable to me that these small creatures God gave us to care for, to be used as punching bags or something to give you pleasure to the sadistic people of that era. And when people say that, oh yeah, it was the Nazis. No, it wasn't only the Nazis. It was all of Europe. It was every country in Europe. Everybody participated. Do not make me choose. You'll be very disappointed. I'll start my story to you with the origin. Again, this time, it's still in Warsaw, Poland, in the capital. My mother and father came from elsewhere. My mother came from Brzezin in Poland, a city in Poland. And my dad is from Ostrów Mazowieck, the region of Mazowieck, and the city is Ostrów. I'm not too sure what they're known for. The only one I was able to find some decent research was about my mother's city, Brzezin. It was one of the two top cities in all of Poland that were the schmata business, the fashion industry of Poland. That's where all the best tailors, fashion designers, those that produced mass production for the country, all wardrobes, and decided on quality, decided on actual fashion. And so most of the Jews were involved in that field, most. My mother's family not only had a few shops where they did the sewing, the designing, they also had a store of hardware where they supplied machinery and any form of equipment to the farms in and around Brzezin to the farmers. They also owned land, which was against the law, but they were able to do that because they had put the names of Gentiles on the land, and they allowed the Gentiles to live on the land, work the land, and get a very nice percentage of the income. But they were still able to own the land until, of course, Hitler came when everything was gone. some of the people that lived on that land and worked on it for generations. From the story I have from my parents, that my mother's family lived in and within around the area for over 400 years.
Wow.
So it's not as if they came last week and were trying to move in and take over. They've been there forever. My mother's father, my grandfather, Chaim Meyer, was a hardworking man, a brilliant man, studied with the house of, the originator of Hasidic movement, Baal Shem Tov?
Yeah.
Yeah. He studied in that Heter, he was given Heter Yeroah, which means he was given permission to teach. He was such a brilliant student. And of course, he had a big family. He had a wife and he had businesses. And so he was postponing his acceptance of the rabbinic title. He kept saying, let's do it next year. Let's do it next year. Unfortunately, next year and next year didn't come. At the age of 35, in the prime of his life, he suddenly died of a heart attack. He was gone. Grandma was devastated, and of course, four daughters and a young, very young son, the only son that was going to yeshiva and studying. He was going to be the rabbi. His dad didn't succeed in becoming because of ill health. His name, that young man, was Aharon, Arale, as everyone called him. He was a handsome, gorgeous, gorgeous young man. I have photos to prove it with. Some very few photos, a small handful. Mama had sewn into the bottom of her coat. It was a very, very shaky time in Poland. The Nazis showed up. They came in with their planes. I am speaking the words of my father, may he rest in peace. They came with their planes, they flew into Warsaw, and before Warsaw had a chance to get their air force in gear, the German planes came to the airfields all over Poland and Warsaw. They destroyed the air force. They destroyed most of the air force before they even were able to start their engines. My father's anger was beyond words. He says small handfuls of planes would go up in the air against those massive aircrafts. They were useless. They were useless. His number one sentence, my father, was, it took Hitler 2 weeks to tame Poland. It took Hitler over 2 months to destroy the underground in the Warsaw Ghetto.
Let me just stop you for a moment. We're here with Sabra Marcus, who's giving us her incredible, incredible story. I have no words. It's very, very difficult for me to speak on it. She's going to give us the rest of her story. And Sabra, please continue. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and my name is Ari Schoenbrunn. This is the end of part one of Sabra Marcus' amazing story from her experience during the Holocaust. Stay tuned for part two coming very soon. Until then, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.